All right, here we go. And one, and a two, and welcome to the Tales from the Long Box podcast. This is episode 160. That's right, 160. Wow. Top three summer events. And when we mean events, we're talking about comic book events. And it's probably, easily stated. But anyway, I'm Chris Mosby.
I am Caleb Gerard.
And I am Murray Fox.
Yes, you are.
Yes, we are. We are all here.
What?
All three of us are here. So, summer events. Top three summer events is what we're hooking in. And we're talking like crossover kind of thing. That's what I understood.
Sure, it's kind of flexible.
Yeah. Well, two of mine probably were summer crossover events. One of them is just a crossover. The crossover of all crossovers. Oh, but that would be telling. Ooh. So let's get into it. Murray, just see how I did that? I teased a little bit.
Yep.
You're big tease. You see teased.
You know, and right now I have to tell you, this is one of my dream things right here. I am surrounded by computers and monitors right now. Ugh. I have three computers and six monitors. Right now.
But one of them is porn, but whatever, it's all good.
No, that was earlier this morning.
Oh, okay.
So, one of them is... one of them's work, so... I got my new Dell stuff, I'm now a Dell employee. Well, actually, I'm in between jobs, technically. I start next week, I'm on vacation.
Slacker.
I'm on vacation!
You laid off loaf?
Yeah.
No, I'm not laid off, I quit.
Weren't you on sabbatical for like a year?
Yeah.
Totally.
Okay.
Alrighty. Now it's bad.
I've been doing laundry today. So, all right, let's get this going. Uri, is your idea so you could go first?
All right.
Somebody else wants to.
I found this so hard. I thought it was going to be like a snap, boom, 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 but... It wasn't, because there are so many like little miniseries crossovers that have like a great idea, and then the execution falls way flat.
That was my problem too. I was like, oh god, I remember that one. Oh my god, it turned out to be crap.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But you know, that's I'm glad to hear that, because I loved all mine.
And then there were some that were like, oh, I don't know, like there's so many weird ways to do it, and DC and Marvel have both done the whole gamut of they've done everything. Like they've had self-contained miniseries with little little issues that tie in sometimes, and they've done stories where you kind of have to buy 8 million books to get one story, and they've done
there are several like that. Yeah,
they've done those annuals where
the annual ones. Yeah.
Anyway, I had a tougher time with it than I thought. However,
that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I actually had to go in my comic boxes to get all the ones I have out, and I was happy about it, so.
I'm missing one as I think about it going through. Oh, you know what, though? I've probably got it filed with Legion.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool.
I'm going to go with that one, actually.
Okay.
It was Final Night. I'm going to go with Final Night.
Final Night. Oh, yeah, that's a good choice, actually.
I like that one. I liked it. It had Stuart Immonen on art, and he was consistently good all the way throughout.
I thought he was, too, yeah.
And was that a Geoff Johns book?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think that's pre-Geoff Johns.
Yeah, I believe so, too.
Really?
Or at least pre-
oh, you know at least what it pre- is, because it's around... Yeah,
let me look that up. I actually have a trade of that.
I don't know who. Carl Kiesel, maybe? Mm. Is he the writer? Huh.
It was Carl Kiesel. Good job.
Oh, good. Yeah.
There you go. You're right. It was totally before Geoff Johns, because he...
Yeah, I was way out there.
Didn't really get started till Day of Judgment. He did that many
times. Yes. He's the one that redeemed Hal. Well, wait a minute. Yeah, that was after. Yeah, because Hal died during that. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So give us a synopsis
for the people that haven't read that.
Oh, wait, so Final Night was basically just a really long take on the one of those great Legion stories where the Sun Eater comes and eats or tries to eat the Sun, and the Legion has to stop it, and Pharaoh Lad sacrifices himself. Sorry, spoilers.
Yeah.
And saves the entire universe from...
That's the original.
The sun being eaten. That's the original one. So then they got the idea to take that idea. Yeah.
It was a post-Zero Hour, too. Don't remember.
Yes, it was post-Zero Hour because it was... Uh-huh. The Archie Legion was in it.
Yes. Yep. And the Legion was trapped in the past for...
Well, they were still in the 20th century at that point, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
Yeah. Okay. So it had good Legion art, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, so there's a big Sun Eater coming, and instead of it coming in the 30th century, it's coming in the 20th century, and it's going to eat the sun, and everyone on Earth is going to die and freeze.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that setup. That's a good
setup. That's also, unfortunately, Superman starts losing his powers.
Well, with no sun, yeah, that would sucks for him.
You know what that means.
Is that where Superman Blue and Red came from?
Yeah, because they tried to bring it. Five tries to reignite his powers with some device, and that's how the electric Superman came, and then later on it split.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, Electric Blue. Yeah, that's right.
Final Night was where we got the redemption of Hal Jordan and the resurrection of Oliver Queen, but no. No, I was so wrong. The best thing to come out of it?
Yep.
Electric Blue Superman.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, dear.
That's a lot of converging. That's a lot. Actually, that's a lot bigger storyline than I remember when you add all that together.
Well, see, that's what's kind of neat about it, because it touches on, it pulled a lot of the threads that were winding through the DC universe at the time and put it in one big story. So you had, Hal Jordan is the one that sacrificed himself, isn't he?
Yep.
So that was the end of Parallax and the end of that whole ugly, ugly, ugly chapter of Hal's life.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Well, be followed by his ugly stepsister, the Hal Jordan Spectre period of time.
Yeah, well, true.
Was on his way to redemption then. Like, I mean, as goofy as that was, it I don't know. I didn't read it, but it kind of made sense to me. Anyway.
And it's the one day of judgment book I don't have. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's even cooler than you thought.
It is cooler than I thought. It totally is.
Yeah, that was 96.
Yes. And then 96, too.
Yeah.
Wow.
I just looked it up.
Is that it let... It, What was I going to say?
There was an ash can of it, too. I didn't know that.
Oh, I know. Because it lends itself to crossovers that don't have to be super tied in tightly.
That's right.
I'm
sorry.
Yeah, no. Like, you could have Flash off in a frozen central city, or you could show a end of the earth type scene in your book without it having to be a great big derailing of whatever your current stories are, which is
absolutely
kind of a nice way to do the crossover thing.
Mm-hmm. And it was the red skies with consequences.
Yeah. Totally. Red skies that mattered, right? Like, it wasn't just crisis red skies. Oh, let's fly along. It was, there's lots of snow and we're freezing and we'll deal with that while we're fighting the Joker or whatever.
Yeah. I enjoyed that one.
I liked it.
Yeah, I've got I have the issues and the trade of it.
Mm-hmm. I do, too.
I don't know if that's on Comixology or not, though.
I don't know.
Let me. I have Comixology right here. Let me look it up for the viewers here, or the listeners.
Back in the day when Comic Buyer's Guide existed, it was voted the best miniseries, or limited series in 97. So.
Wow.
Hmm.
Yes.
They're good.
They do have the Final Night, the entire series, on here, and including the little one-shot Parallax Emerald Night, where it kind of goes into continued from Final Night number 3, once the greatest Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, succumbed to grief and anger and became the villain Parallax. Can he find the courage with himself to be the hero he once was? And it's continued into Final Night, so they've got that as well.
Yeah.
So they've got both of those. They have the series. 4 issues for $1.99 a piece.
It's not bad.
No, it's not. It's a very good series.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think all the important events happened within the 4 issues.
They did, as far as I remember.
I don't remember having to reread other issues to get the...
No, uh-uh. I don't remember either.
The main thing. Oh, wait, that's my choice.
That's a good one. Very good.
Uh-huh. All right, so I go the opposite direction. Mine requires immense numbers of crossovers and
awesome.
You
have to list all the issues.
Oh God, I don't think we have time for that.
Okay, all right, whatever.
Because mine was a Marvel event from
you're exempt.
1995 through 1996.
Holy crap! Was...
And let's see, 12 titles tied into this.
Holy crap!
But they're all brand new titles that were created specifically for the event, and the event was Age of Apocalypse.
Oh, good one. That's a good one. I need to get... They got trades of that, don't they?
They sure do. They sure do. And they I wouldn't be shocked if they've got omnibuses as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they do. I think I've seen that. I'm going to have to get that now that I...
They basically... stopped publication of the X-Men universe for a period of 3 or 4 months.
That's right.
And they replaced it all with this, you know, this Age of Apocalypse, one of those alternate Earth.
This was Flashpoint before Flashpoint.
Yeah, it was also, and unlike Flashpoint, it was to be a temporary. We knew this was temporary.
They said it.
They said from the beginning, you know, that we. You know, we're going to stop publication of our titles for a few months. We're going to start up Excalibur, Gambit, and Externals, Generation Next, Astonishing X-Men, Amazing X-Men, Weapon X, Factor X, X-Man, X-Universe, X-Men, Omega, and Alpha. So we got Nathan. Yeah, we got Nathan out of this. We got X-Man out of this. We got Dark Beast out of it, but a few other things. But the whole concept.
A couple of those characters crossed over to our universe, but I don't remember.
But
was a good one. I liked that.
The new mutant villain Legion decided to go even extra nuts, and
that's right, yeah, I remember.
He did his little sending you to the cornfields thing to the X-Men universe and sent them all off to this universe where Apocalypse won in a fight. So all these, you know, these heroes have to are redefined in that world. Sort of like when Franklin Richards did his whole thing with the Fantastic Four and the Avengers and company. But this was the X version of it. Awesome art came out of this. We had Andy Cooper doing some stuff. Salvador LaRocca, Chris Backlow did some stuff in there. The Dodsons, Ian Churchill, Chaco. A ton of writers, including your man Mark Waid, was on one of the books.
Oh, I remember that, yeah. He did do that, didn't he?
And this was, I mean, the new alliances were set up. This kind of set up the whole romance between Rogue and Magneto that still occasionally pops up in the regular universe. List of other things. I mean, it just basically it realigned everyone and brought in a bunch of other characters that might not necessarily. Carol Danvers was a big player in it. What's her name? The Wasp was a big player in it. Lila Chani actually had a role in it. It just rolled. It was a big, huge event. Put a lot of crossovers and unfortunately, a lot of them mattered.
Yeah, it did kind of, didn't it?
You know, if you missed one issue of something, you may miss the whole point of what's going on in one of the other titles, which was cool. That was a good editorial control. I mean, you know, everything mattered to all the other titles. And again, some of it spun out after the event was over. But for the most part, it was, when it started, started. When it ended, and that was it.
But that's kind of a cool way to do it, too, because they canceled the other books for 3 or 4 months.
Yes.
So you weren't double-dipping. You were...
Because now they would do that, I bet.
Yes, they would.
Mm-hmm. They would put them all out and then do the regular stuff at the same time.
Now, were you reading the X-Books at the time?
I was, yeah.
I was, absolutely. I was a big fan of, at that point, Generation X or Nick, what was that called? The Bacalo, Lobdell book?
It might have been Generation X.
Yeah, there was going on, as well as X Factor was happening at that time with Peter David on it.
Mm-hmm.
There was a couple, I can't remember specifically what I was reading at the time, but I think I ended up reading all of these spin-on titles, except for maybe X-Man, just because I always thought the Nathan Graydon character was kind of stupid.
Yeah, they were trying to cash out on the Cable thing more than once, weren't they?
Yeah, Cable was big at that point.
So what happened to the stories that were going on in the books? Like, were they all kind of wrapping up at that point?
Well, yeah, somewhat. Well, I mean, something happened and that universe got destroyed, though it didn't stay destroyed. If I remember, this is just out of memory, because the Dark Beast came over, X-Man came over, and there was like the Sugar Man or something. Didn't he come over? And then
your question is though, what was going on in the regular titles
before
they stopped?
Before Age of
Apocalypse, right? My bad.
Did they have to derail the stories or?
No, there was again. It was a really good editorial moment, just like with Flashpoint, a good editorial moment where you got all of them coming together saying, okay, we've got this coming up, and just like with Flashpoint, there wasn't this huge, you know, hey, we've got this thing coming up. And you better be aware that you knew something was happening, just like with Flash and what Flashpoint ended up doing, but you didn't know how big an impact it was going to be, including the, you know, for all intents and purposes, the cancellation of all those titles for a period of time. Now they didn't come back with number ones. They came back, you know, their numbering continued. Whatever number it was before the event started, next issue was right after the event.
Right. But then they wouldn't have been able to just pick up where they left off, presumably, because I would guess the Age of Apocalypse had some sort of impact on their stuff.
Let me look that up.
It did. And for the life of me, I couldn't, you know, I would have to go back and read all the regular books plus the Age of Apocalypse books to tell you what the impacts were. But to Chris's point, a lot of it was just, you know, a lot of the lasting ones were characters that ended up getting pulled out of that temporary universe into the regular 666.
Yeah, okay, it says, the ramifications of the main comics universe were when the correct timeline was restored. It was later retconned as having occurred in the alternate universe of Earth 295. Yes, Charles was killed. That's what happened, and Legion caused it.
And it was in the past. It was
pre-X-Men
times.
Right. The X-Men Alpha was first, and then they had all the series, and they had an X-Men Omega. That was great.
So, and you know, to the unfortunately, they decided to do some later storytelling from that.
Well, that's universe, where Blink came from.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that now.
So, in any case, I thought that was fun. You know, again, you get the alternate universe wank that we all love to read occasionally. So.
And then they went back and tried to do series from that universe a while back, didn't they?
Yeah, it failed miserably.
Yeah, I thought it would. So anyway, sweet. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a real good one.
I mean, like I said, kind of the opposite of what you chose, Murray, which is Final Night, very self-contained. This was incredibly not.
Oh, good Lord, no. Not even close. All right. I do believe it's my turn.
I believe it is.
Well, my choice is somewhat timely. This is a Dick Grayson story. And, well, also a Batman story. But back in the old days, kids, there was a time where Batman got his back broke. And he came back, and I believe we talked about that in our top five Batman story episode, where he got his back broke, and he comes back, and he takes the mantle of the bat back from John Paul Valley, or Azrael. And right after that, Bruce Wayne had to go do something somewhere. And I don't think it's ever been disclosed what he did. If it has been, I totally missed it.
Sex change.
No, that wasn't it. So what happened was, during that time, he had Dick Grayson be Batman for him for a while. So that was the story, Batman Prodigal was the name of it. And it took place in Batman number 512 through 514, Batman Shadow of the Bat 32 through 34, Detective Comics number 679 through 681, Robin volume 4 number 11 through 13. So that's 12 parts.
Wow.
3 months. Yeah. And then there's a trade of it and as well. It's really good. But basically this is where they also established, I think, the first time that Dick Grayson's personal villain is Two-Face. They explore that a lot. And he ends up facing up against him. And several different artists and writers. You had Chuck Dixon, Doug Monek, and Alan Grant were the writers. And you got a whole bunch of different pencilers. Brett Levins, Mike Gustavich, Phil Jimenez. Some of the first work of his I ever saw. Mark D. Bright, Ron Wagner, Graham Nolan, Lee Weeks, and John Cleary, and then, you know, a whole bunch of other people in this. Very, very good stuff.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Which one more? What was the actual title of the storyline again?
Batman Prodigal.
Prodigal, right. Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Good, good, good stuff. Huh. It's one of my favorite. So, yeah, it's the first time that Dick Grayson was Batman.
And how did Bruce approach him and say, hey, do you need the cowl back?
Yeah, he just come back from whatever he was doing. And that started the, you can actually get the, here we go. You can actually, the next storyline after that was called Troika. And that's when he changed the costume from, and I was reading Batman religiously at the time. That was a storyline after that. It went through Batman, the same comics, all the Batman comics that were going out at the time. But he changed it to an all-black costume from the gray and the blue. And it was all black, and except for the bat symbol, it still had the the yellow with background that we're mostly used to. They hadn't gone to the normal, just the bat. It was still the yellow circle part from way back when. But anyway, they went up against the Rat Catcher. Yeah, no kidding. And one of my favorite parts was he gets lured into a trap by this character called the Tax Collector. And he wakes up. Yeah, I know. Was it the Tally Man or was it the Tax Collector? I forget. Anyway, he gets lured into the to this guy. And in this guy captures Batman thinking it's John Paul Valley, but it's not. And I guess he had, hold on, I'm trying to find the guy's name. The guy had pretty much carved the bat symbol into his chest. And it just kind of showed how bad that guy was. So he was he had been captured and was about to be killed for something that he didn't do. And he ends up using the skills that Batman taught him for escape, you know, escape artist, and got out of there just barely before he got his head blown off. So it's a good little story. Anyway.
That was always the biggest thing that bothered me about the Jean-Paul Vallée stuff and all and all that. And I was Dick Grayson should have been the go-to guy.
Oh, absolutely. And they talked about that right before that. You know, he didn't. That was during he was in Bloodhaven, and they were still that. You know, but he hadn't had a title yet. But he was still doing his own thing, and Batman didn't want to bother him. That was his excuse, you know. He didn't want to have, you know, live in his. He was trying to keep from living in his shadow. But anyway, he ended up facing Two-Face because that was the one that, you know. And Dixon expands on that in Robin Year One, where one of Robin's first missions, he gets captured. By Two-Face and gets the living crap beat out of him almost to death with a ball bat. So that's always been his, you know, main villain.
What year was this again?
I sent you the wrong thing.
Tell me, I'm going to say 94, 95.
That's about right, yeah.
Okay.
Let me see. Well, they're calling it New Earth. I wouldn't call it that, but yeah, when was this put out? The trade came out in 94-95 is when the comics came out. The trade was put out in 97. But yeah, 12 issues. But yeah, it was hard to. It was one of those things where they put it was carried from each issue, so for 3 months you had to make sure you got all the Batman titles at the time to get it all. And I do have...
There were still fewer back then.
Oh, yeah. I assume that's all of them because it's Batman, Batman Shadow of the Bat, Detective Comics, and Robin. Nightwing didn't even have a title at the time. He was still in the... He was in the long-haired... Oh, he was in the Titans then. That's why. Yeah. Now I understand. But anyway, it was an interesting... one of my favorite Dick Grayson stories. So I went on about that long enough now. Somebody else's turn.
Okie dokie, it's my turn. I'm going to go with maybe the lead up to Infinite Crisis, the four, I guess they kind of played the four miniseries that I think they led up to Infinite Crisis. So what were they? There was the Villains one, which was Villains United. There was...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Adam Strange went out in space.
Rand Sanagar Holy War.
Yeah, there was the Magic one, which wasn't Day of Judgment. It was something...
It was... had Shazam and... I've got all the trades for those. And yeah. The issues. I forget what that one's called.
Fourth one. Ugh, shoot. Anyway, I liked the way those four miniseries highlighted like different sections of the DC universe and kinda built, like at that point in DC universe, everything was kind of building towards something, and whether you were just reading little snippets of it or whether you were reading it all, you knew it was building and stuff was getting more important and everything was kind of dovetailing together.
Uh-huh.
Day of Vengeance. Yeah. Day of Vengeance. And what was the fourth one?
Project.
Oh, the OMAC Project. Okay, that was maybe the weak bunch. That was the weak one of the bunch. I think. However,
Ran Thanagar War was the first one, and then later on they had Ran Thanagar Holy War. Was after.
Yeah, well, because they did some follow up miniseries afterwards, which weren't as great, but
it was. I still liked them, but that's just me.
Yeah, yeah, they were good, but
because it was.
And then you had like the Adam Strange miniseries, like the Planet Heist miniseries, that kind of led into the Ran Thanagar War.
Yeah, so that's right. I never read that one.
Together, that was written, it's good.
Written by, I think it was written by Dave Gibbons, right?
Yeah, I think it was.
I can't remember.
Yeah, I think it was too.
Art was beautiful. I want to say Pascal.
Anyhow,
I'm losing you.
Oh, sorry. Is that better? Did I cover up the microphone?
Yeah, you covered yourself up, dude.
Yipe. Anyway, I like those 4 minutes. I liked Infinite Crisis 2.
Actually, it was Andy Diggle.
Yes, it was. It was Andy Diggle and... Was it Pascal Ferry or was it...
It was Pascal Ferry.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pascal Ferry.
About 2005-ish.
Yeah. I liked them. I liked the way they all... built their little corner of the DC universe, and then I liked how Infinite Crisis kind of played on all 4 of the themes in each of the books.
Yeah,
I'm not sure that I loved Infinite Crisis. Well, you know what? I enjoyed it a lot when it was coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly better than Final Crisis.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Dave Gibbons did the Ran Thanagar War.
That's right.
Yeah.
I knew he did something on there.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I remember that. It was very good.
So... Again, what particular was it? Just the fact that it broke the DC universe up into its four major components and focused on those, and then
I think it was more that DC had this big plan, this big vision of where they were taking their books, and these miniseries all kind of worked towards that plan. Like they were working towards Infinite Crisis, they were working towards 52. And that was kind of like the high point, and then they still kept trying to work towards things, but it was never as interconnected and as powerful as those 4 miniseries and then Infinite Crisis were, I think.
I think I understand. There was that it's almost like the buildup was better than the payoff.
Yeah, I'd have to agree.
Yeah, well, and I mean the payoff of Infinite Crisis was good, but then where do you go from there? And they kept trying to build bigger and more. Well, and
we had that awesome Secret Six series from Gail Simone.
Yeah, like a ton of stuff came out of that. You got the Secret Six. You got that whole idea that the Omaks were, and Brother Eye was floating throughout the DC universe, and that people could be turned at any moment, which I didn't love I didn't love that plot twist, but it was a big part of the DCU for a time, and,
and
kind of revitalized their space venture line for a little while.
I think DC does better, actually. I mean, I like you said, they keep trying to top last year's big thing was, and it seems like some of the smaller events actually turn out to be better than the big company wide things.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
I think that's one of the if nothing else great came if nobody else can do. If people say, "Oh God, the new DC universe sucks. The new 52 sucks." They, at least they realize, okay, we can do mini events and excel at them.
Yeah. I like that mini Mystery in Space that they did for a while, too. That was really good. That was Jim Starlin. Some of that tied into the Ran Thanagar Holy War series. But that was really good stuff.
Actually, for this one, the 4 that you're talking about here, Maria, I think I only got ended up getting 2 of them. I got the Days of Vengeance one.
Yeah.
And I got the Villains United. And I... Spot Red Omak Project and Spot Red Ran Thanagar.
Yeah, because Omak Project was Greg Rucka.
Yeah, I would have thought I would have gone for the Ran Thanagar because I consider myself a.
Well, I have an extra copy of the Omak Project trade if you want it.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up. What was that? I don't think
I said, if you want to read the OMAC project, I've got another trade of it.
Crickets.
Okay, fine. I liked it. It was okay. But I still owe you, what was it? Oh, that Nightfall thing. Yeah. I found it, my extra copy. I will, once I get some cash, I will send it to you.
All right.
That's because I said I would, so I'm a man of my word.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
All right.
Good choice.
Yeah, that's a good one.
All right. Well, I'm going incredibly small from incredibly large in my last one.
Okay.
One of my big introduction to the whole DC universe was Justice League. I mean, I started with Legion, but that led into Justice League, which gave me the entree into other stuff. And, of course, it gave me a lot of the – we got a lot of the introduction to the Golden Age heroes for me was through that, with the Justice League, Justice Society crossovers that they did every year.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
And my absolute favorite of those, and I have a feeling you guys are going to support this as a favorite. Maybe not your favorite, but as a favorite.
Okay.
It's the one that started in Justice League of America, Volume 1, Number 195, written by Jerry Conaway and drawn by George Perez. And the first issue was called Targets of Two Worlds, where we got the the Secret Society of Supervillains deciding to kill off five heroes from each world.
Oh, I remember hearing about that.
Limbo to create an imbalance, to get rid of all the heroes in one of the two worlds. So I got this was my first introduction. It was like Ultra Humanite, Signal Man, Brainwave, Ragdoll, Mist, Monocle. I think even
was
new to me from this story.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
We had on Earth One, we had Atom, Batman, Black Canary, Firestorm, and Wonder Woman needed to be gotten rid of. And on Earth Two, a couple of my favorites, we had Hourman and Johnny Thunder, as well as the Golden Age Superman, Golden Age Hawkman, and Golden Age Flash, all needed to be gotten away with so that somehow they would create a cosmic imbalance and heroes would all disappear from one of the worlds. And it was just, it was kind of cool where these villains, all these heroes had their main villains were going up against them and taking them out. And it was.
That is awesome.
It was awesome. It was just fun. It was three issues, self-contained. And then, of course, it led, you know, with some of the villains getting stuck in limbo, led to All-Star Squadron and then the creation of Infinity Incorporated, two of my favorite titles. I don't know what else to say. I just thought it was...
No, fun. That's awesome.
And again, great George Perez art.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's when he was his best.
Had this really cool poster in one of them that he drew a two-page spread of the current Justice League, the Justice League members of the time and the Justice Society members of that time all posing for the camera along with Snapper Carr.
You know what? That 195 is in Comixology.
Good.
Excellent.
All three of them should be there. Yep. 195, 196, and 197 should.
Well, I just might have to buy those. Yes, they all three are there.
And again, most of these JLA, JSA stories had a big crisis on whatever, but I think this was just. I think ultimately it turned out to be Crisis in Limbo was the title of the. Ended up being the title of the story, but.
Makes sense.
Anyhow, you know, they all get their butts handed to them by the supervillains to start with, and then they come back when it turns out that the Earth 2 supervillains are actually trying to pull a fast one on their Earth 1 supervillains.
Of course they are.
And so the Earth 1 supervillains try and rescue the superheroes, and then they all get their butts handed to them, and the superheroes win.
Wow.
You know, a classic case of one team not trusting the other on the bad guy side. Sort of the Treasure of Sierra Madre moment.
Nice.
Again, just... this was...
That is good. I'm buying that. I got it in my cart, ready to go.
You got an opportunity to reintroduce some villains. I mean, I'm sure nobody remembered Brainwave or The Mist or the Monocle.
Yeah, no kidding.
And then Ragdoll turned out to be a big deal over in Starman later on, as well as the Mist. The Mist did as well. And, of course, Psycho Pirate became the huge foil for Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah, yeah.
Ultra Humanite was just a big creepy monkey.
Oh, yeah. And then to kind of give you an idea when that came out, on the cover of 195, it says, see the film Superman 2.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That is cool.
Oh, see, I think I picked up these issues because the Secret Society of Supervillains was kind of a part of it. Like, they were wrapping up plot lines, I think, that were left over from when that book was canceled.
Maybe. Really?
I think so.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think there was a bit of a connection there, and I'd have to dig them out and reread them to figure out what it was, but I remember picking it up thinking, oh, yeah.
That's weird. The second one doesn't have a press cover, but the third one does. That's weird.
Well, Perez.
This had storylines carried over from that cancel. I didn't know that. Okay, well, thank you.
That makes sense.
This poster's so cool. The one that Perez drew of the Satellite Era team as well as that era of Justice Society.
Yeah, I saw that on Facebook not too long ago, I think.
With the big mask Robin from Earth 2. And
oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep, I remember. I've seen that before. That's a great poster.
Golly gee whiz. George Perez could draw. Can draw. Excuse me, can draw.
Yes, he can. Looking forward to his Boom series.
So yeah. That's my second choice again.
That's an excellent choice. I'm looking forward to reading that.
Cool. Hope it holds up. I haven't read it in years, but it might. I have fond memories of it.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, it's what year is that?
80. Hold on, I'll tell you real quick. It was
81. Wow.
Yep.
Yes, wow. So July through September of 81. So technically it was a summer crossover.
Yeah, I'll go with that. I'll go with that.
That was a great time for the Justice League, too, because after that they went back in time to, like, the 1800s, and they met Jonah Hex and Cinnamon and Batlash and those guys. And then they led right into Justice League 200.
Mm-hmm.
Was the Old West story before 200 or after 200?
Before. Yeah. If you look at that link I sent, it's 198 is when – it's right after.
Yeah, yeah.
So 198, 199 are the Old West story. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Unfortunately, they don't have those two at Comixology.
I think that's – I want to say that was like Don Heck doing art, so don't worry about it.
Yes, it was.
I wouldn't stress too hard over missing.
Oh yeah, it has the Perez Ross Andrew cover. Okay,
it's Don Heck Murray.
I know.
Black.
Awesome.
No. Black.
No.
Oh, I'm looking at 201. They got Ultra the
from Perez to Don Heck.
Yeah, that's quite a jump, man.
That's tough transition for sure.
Just a little bit.
I like
because that's Don probably Heck. Around the time. Yeah, that's when Teen Titans was big, wasn't it?
They didn't even have Don Heck on number 200, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
Well, did. No. You got to pull out your big guns for that one.
Yeah. All right. Sorry.
Oh, that's cool, man. That's something that's a geeking out thing right there for sure.
Thank you.
I never did really read much Justice League. You know when I started collecting Justice League? The Detroit era.
Could be so, worse.
Yeah, that's a low bar, though. All right, my turn. This has got to be one of my favorite Batman-ish crossovers. Now, probably I've talked about this on the show before, I'm sure. Is the storyline And the cool thing about this, it is takes place in, let's see, 1, 2, 3 different titles, but it was all written by probably, in my opinion, my favorite era of the Batman titles was when Chuck Dixon probably wrote just about everything. So it started out in Green Arrow, not too long after, well, I don't know, I don't remember how many issues, but Oliver Queen had been dead for a while, so the Green Arrow title had a Connor Hawke in it. It started out in Green Arrow number 134, moves into Detective Comics 723, Robin number 55, Nightwing number 23 with wonderful Dixon McDaniel collaboration, and then finished off in Green Arrow number 135, and this is the storyline called Brotherhood of the Fist. And I have checked. Every single one of these issues is on Comixology. I just got through buying them for a wonderful $10. This has not ever been collected, by the way. But they've got all the issues on Comixology. So basically, this is the deal. You got... Here, let me pull the thing up and talk about it better than I can. Basically, what happens is, at one time, Connor Hawke Green Arrow defeats this character called the Silver Monkey. And he's a big... badass martial artists for hire. So he disgraces the monkey clan. So he goes back and they decide that not only does Connor Hawke have to die, but all the other pretenders of the other martial arts defenders must die as well. So they go after anybody that's got any kind of skill. So it starts off in Green Arrow. It goes into Detective Comics because, Batman and Green Connor end up working on the same case, and that's when they first come up on it. And they're attacked by this group. And as they thought Silver Monkey was the only one, but apparently there's this whole cult of them, and there's these different schools. And each school... the Emerald Monkeys, the Obsidian Monkeys, whatever, and the more of them there are, the lower their skill. So more of them and more of them come, and then all of a sudden shows up the Paper Monkey and is fighting the other monkey clans for rights to fight Connor Hawke. And you find out...
Why is Connor, like, their foil, their big target.
See, one of the things that he was raised in a monastery. See, I read, I picked up, I actually have every single issue of that run, Green Arrow, from the Mike Grell days all the way up to the end. And I was reading it at the time. So he was raised in a monastery, and even he has the natural skill with a bow like Oliver did. He is a way better martial artist, though. And that's what... So he beats this guy in hand-to-hand combat, and that's what causes the whole issue. So, I mean, and Katana, Black Canary, Bronze Tiger, Judo Master, as well as Nightwing and Robin show up in this thing. And Batman is even impressed by his skill. So it goes through all these issues, and... he ends up taking on the Paper Monkey, which ends up being Lady Shiva. And he survives it. And it's just martial arts, kung fu awesomeness through the whole thing. 1, 2, 3. It's only 5 issues. And, but yeah, it is good stuff. It really is. And it's like this blog post I found about it. You know, Chuck Dixon, he was the man as far as all these characters went. And I was reading all these titles that he was writing. And I always love Scott McDaniel and Chuck Dixon and Nightwing. And, that's what I loved about it. I mean, seeing Connor and Robin and Nightwing together in this, and they're fighting all these. And this was right after the cataclysm happened, the big quake. And this was even right before Birds of Prey came about. And they even kind of set that up a little bit. And you had an Eddie Fires guy that was in the earlier issues that was kind of taking care of Connor. So he ends up, the monastery ends up hiring Deathstroke to take him out because they can't use guns. And, so there's that fight going on in one issue and there's guns blazing. So one of the big fights takes place in this 60-story building that had toppled over during the quake. So this is after Cataclysm, but before No Man's Land, the time frame. So, you know, you see this big, huge, and that's where a lot of the monkeys were hiding out. So, you know, you got Batman and the rest of them fighting the monkeys in the falling over skyscraper. And then you get Eddie Fires and Deathstroke having a gun battle in the monastery. And it's just good, clean action fun. I loved it.
Neat.
I just got through reading it again. Right before the podcast,
Dixon really is underrated when it comes to that kind of action story.
Oh, absolutely. When he did, he left and went to CrossGen for a while. I forget the name of the title, but he had a couple of them that were martial arts stuff, and they did pretty good too. But yeah, if you want to read this story and. I mean, it's the same writer on all of these books, but different artists. But it's really good stuff. So, I mean, all those issues are out there on Comixology. And I can put links to them, I guess, in the show notes or say them again.
Was Dixon the regular writer on both Green Lantern or Green Arrow and Detective at that point?
I'm not really sure he was a detective, but he was on Robin. At
right.
the time, and Nightwing and Green Arrow, but I think they just let him do Detective to finish the story.
I didn't realize he did Green Arrow ever. I mean that's news to me. So
yeah, oh yeah, so that's when it was big when I started doing that reading. I forget he might have even been writing it when Ollie got killed, but I don't remember.
That seems likely. I mean, it sounds like his kind of gig.
Yeah, I've been reading because at one point I decided I wanted all those Green Arrows, and so I was picking them up. And then at one point I got to I think it was around Zero Hour time actually. I started reading it, and Dixon had taken over was writing it by that point, and I read it all the way to the end. So
I kind of like those low-key crossovers, too, where they have, you know, one character, one story that kind of bounces through a number of titles and draws the characters together. And
Yeah, that's what I liked about it. I just wish that the last chapter had been done by McDaniel, because I love fight scenes. I love watching, reading and looking at the fight scenes that McDaniel did with Nightwing. That's some of my favorite stuff.
I think that's, you know, I was checking out the latest series from Marvel, the Master of Kung Fu stuff.
Yeah.
Or Deadly Hands of Kung Fu, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, how is that?
You know, the biggest problem with it is the art. And because of the subject matter, which is this whole Kung Fu thing, and you have to, it's very, you know, it's visual.
Uh-huh.
You don't get to do a lot of posing, and it's very active. Like, you know, I think Jackie Chan, you know, when I think of that kind of stuff. And I think of these, you know, these types of stuff, and as well as the early, you know, Deadly Hands of Kung Fu title.
Yeah.
You know, very, very kinetic, and that title lacks. It's muddy, and it's not uh-huh. pretty. The same thing with the Iron Fist one. Again, it's supposed to be a Kung Fu book.
Yeah, I stopped reading that too.
So that he was lucky enough to get, you know, three or four artists to be able to draw this five-part story for him that could all do good hand-to-hand combat storytelling. Yeah. It's cool. That's a lucky guy. Lucky readers.
Yeah, no kidding.
Not to back the current stuff, because Marvel's, you know, the Marvel Now stuff has been pretty amazing, but, and the art, again, the art on Iron Fist is drop-dead gorgeous. It's just inappropriate for the subject.
Okay.
So anyhow.
Here we go. Deadly Hands of Kung Fu.
I think Chris is trying to up his Amazon stock value.
Totally.
I'm looking at the large archive of files that I have downloaded here. For some reason, I only have the first and the fourth issue, though.
Gotcha.
No loss.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm looking at it. Hey, what do you know? There's a monkey right there, too.
Monkey and Kung Fu always go together.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So, okay. Yeah, Tang Ing Huat Pencils.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yep.
What year was that?
This is just came out recently.
Okay.
It was only a four-issue series, though, wasn't it?
So that's like way after his Doom Patrol run.
Yeah, I would say so, yes.
He was doing the Legion when Legion was starring in that book for a while for X-Men, X-Men Legacy.
Right. Okay. I think his style changed a little bit. However, that's neither here nor there. Okay, my last choice. I'm going to go with, I think, Invasion.
Really?
Yeah, I liked it.
Invasion. It was okay.
I liked it.
It was great.
I don't know. There's something about that. I didn't enjoy that as much as I thought I would. Maybe it was because I don't know what was going on at the time. I had to end up play catch up on it or something. But
I don't think I enjoyed all the crossovers and stuff.
No, that was weren't really all that good.
And at that point, I was probably still one of those people that tried to get every crossover thing. Maybe. Maybe. But I liked it. I enjoyed it. There were things that jumped up. Like, you got the new Doom Patrol coming out of it. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
You got, like, the DC Universe space suddenly became so much bigger and wider. You got, like, the Durlins and you got the Coons.
Well, that part was cool because they tied in all those Legion villain races into current, you know,
that was cool.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that then.
Yeah. I liked all that. I liked the world building that went on and the fact that the heroes were coming together to defeat the invasion. It was, you know, I mean, it's not the best miniseries out there, but you got like 80 pages each issue and you got Keith Giffen and you got Bill Mantlow and you got Todd McFarlane and then other people on art.
Yeah.
Bart Sears.
Oh yeah, Bart Sears. See, that's not so bad.
Yes.
Yeah, superpower snapper tar.
Yes.
Snapper tar. Yeah, I think that's what the problem was. I think the crossovers really muddied it for me.
Fair enough.
Come on, you got Legion out of it.
Mm-hmm. That's cool, though. Yeah.
I want to get all those issues. I want to get the physical issues of that. I've got a good chunk of them. I want to get the rest.
And didn't Snapper Card get a series out of it?
Yeah, the Blasters. It was a one-shot called Blasters.
Oh, that's right. It was a bunch of people that had their metagene turned on.
Okay, you know what? That's the one thing I didn't love. I didn't love that they decided to call the DC mutants these metageneed people, but whatever. I mean, Marvel has their X gene. We have our metagene, and
you got Legion. You got JLE out of it as well. It looks like JLE?
Yeah.
Oh. Interesting.
What else came out of it? I didn't realize the Doom Patrol came out of this though. That's news to me. Okay.
Well, like I think
version of it?
He was leaving the team, the series anyway, and Grant Morrison was coming on anyway. But they used Invasion as a way to kind of clear the decks. So they killed off some of the characters that Morrison didn't want to use. They got rid of they got rid of the they got rid of that kid who could make fire come out of his hands. They got rid of the chief's wife. They killed off a couple of other people. They brought Crazy Jane in. Yeah. Like, she was brought in as a new Medellin character. Like, her powers were manifested when the gene bomb went off. So, I mean...
Oh, that's right. Okay, Legion came in after that. Gotcha.
Anyway, but he used what was going on in the DCU as a way to springboard and kickstart his story. So, yeah, they kind of sprung out of it.
Yeah, he would have found a way to introduce the character and kill off the other ones somehow, but this was like his foil for saying, okay, I can, yeah. You know what?
Wow.
I have to write within the DC universe. Okay, thank you very much. Jeez. I will go ahead and use it.
Check out the Wikipedia entry on this. There's a lot of crossovers in it. Maybe that's why. I couldn't keep up with it.
It was huge. It was huge.
Yeah, I remember that now.
Yeah, this is when the summer event miniseries started to go banana cakes.
Mm-hmm.
There were 18 tie-ins to the number one issue.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Including a completely underrated Power of the Atom was coming out at that time.
Yeah. That was good stuff.
Wow, sorry. I love Power of the Atom book, so.
Yeah. I finally embraced the showcase format and bought some off of eBay, and one of the ones I picked up were the two Atom ones with, you know, the Ray Palmer Atom in it. I've read through one of them, and it's really cool. I might end up getting archives out of it. I don't know. So much disposable income now.
See, this was a fun miniseries.
It was. I think it was the tie-ins that soured me on it, I think. But looking back at it, I know I've gotten that trade out and just read it before. Anyway, go ahead.
Alrighty, that's my choice.
That was good. That's good, man.
I had a hard time picking a number three. I was going back and forth. My first choice was something a little darker, and then I decided to go a little bit lighter, and then I decided, wait a minute. The obvious choice is Flashpoint.
Yeah, that was a big one.
Because that's where the New 52 came out of, and that's why the heck we're doing this freaky thing.
Yeah.
Every week.
Yeah, I got all those trades that they made of it on my Amazon wish list. I'm thinking about picking them up because there were some I missed.
I've got to admit, I haven't read Flashpoint since it came out, but I know there are a lot of naysayers for the New 52, but there are some books that came out of this event that were awesome. I mean, they were so good. And I think that Flashpoint came in at a weird time when Flash was just getting going again. I mean, it had just come out of a really low point in terms of its storytelling and its publishing at that point. It wasn't very good. They had just reintroduced Barry Allen back into the DC universe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then they wanted to do this whole reboot thing, and they figured, what the hell? Let Geoff Johns loves the Flash. Go up and give him a shot. And so Barry Allen starts screwing with time because his mom gets killed, and he thinks, well, I'm going to go, I'm going to fix that event. And that just exploded into this whole screwing with the whole DC universe. And they never quite explained how saving his mom impacts Bruce Wayne, Clark Kent, etc. But that's comic book storytelling physics stuff that you just kind of, you got to smile and say, yes, of course, that's fine. It has had a huge number of crossovers and a huge number of spin-out titles, including Booster Gold, including all the Flashpoint books, the Batman one, which was really cool, Knights of Vengeance, and the Dead Man Flying Grayson series, and Citizen Cold, and Outsider, and the Abin Sur. I mean, there was a ton of spin-out from this thing.
Yeah.
You can't. You want to talk about something that just. Oops, sorry.
Got a text.
But it was fun.
Focus.
It was comic book storytelling, a little dark. I mean, there's no question about that. And the world of Flashpoint was incredibly dark. No one was happy.
Oh, good lord, yeah.
I mean, they destroyed Europe, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
And all the Amazons were crazy, throat-slitting people, as well as all the Atlanteans. And Superman was some, you know, trapped in a cave guy or trapped by Star Labs.
Yeah, that was an interesting twist, I thought.
No Hal Jordan. It went on and on. A lot of darkness, but...
No, there was Hal Jordan, but he wasn't a Green Lantern.
Oh, is that right? Okay, well...
Yeah, he was actually, if I'm not mistaken, the one that dropped the bomb on Europe.
Oh, that's pleasant. See?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was dark, but it did its job.
He was still in the military in that universe.
And it set up DC's opportunity to go ahead and, you know, let's go ahead and reboot. What the hell? Let's do another crisis, but mm-hmm. instead of trickling out the changes, let's go ahead and just boom, everything changes today.
Yeah, that was heavy duty.
And a lot of success, a lot of failure came out of it. More success, at least financially for DC.
Oh, big time, yeah.
And creatively gave them an opportunity to do basically, barring their two most popular title lines, which were the Batman line and the Green Lantern line, everything else changed. Mm-hmm. Superman changed. Wonder Woman changed. Wonder Woman changed for the better, for God's sake.
I would think so. Yeah. I think I'd have to agree with you on that one.
You know, Flash was interesting, has been interesting on and off for a while. Freaking Nightwing, interesting on and off. I mean, I know that you've always been a fan, but I haven't.
No, that's cool. I can understand that.
Now we've got that cool Grayson title going on for me. I mean, again, it's just things that may not have been able to happen in the old universe. Though, the longer this goes on, the more likely it is they could have done a lot of this stuff in the old DC universe. But
mm-hmm.
I still think that this event redefined events, I think. I think Crisis did it to a degree, mm-hmm. but this was a hardcore... No holds barred. We're gonna pull out. We're just gonna roll the dice and then guess what? It worked. So Flashpoint is my third choice as a favorite or a best of the crossover events, because it is an event. It's a huge event.
No, I agree with you. That's a good one.
Cool. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Here, let's go. Okay. Now this is the. This is what I would call the crossover of all crossovers.
Oh.
And we're talking about one of my favorite writers and my favorite artiste. I think you might know where I'm going here. And
Wait. Secret Wars 2.
No. Talking JLA Avengers, boys and girls.
Oh, yeah.
20 years in the making. And this was, I actually have the deluxe edition of this, and I think that was before they made it absolute editions, and that's probably what inspired the format, I think. And I got the trade of it. I've got several copies of the issues, and I have that huge edition of it, and it is one of the most beautiful pieces of Perez's work ever, but... And all for the one of the coolest pictures in comic books ever would be the angry Superman with, you know, torn costume holding Thor's hammer in one hand and then Captain America's shield in the other with his eyes about ready to do the heat vision. That's just some cool stuff. And I would love to do this on
the only
show.
Thing that would have made that cooler is to have Wonder Woman's lasso draped around his, hanging from his belt. That's the only thing I would have added.
Yeah, that would have been cool too. Or Batman's utility belt.
Something like, but other than that, it is.
Yeah.
That is a great image.
Yes. I remember the first time I saw it, and it was the cover, and it's like, oh, oof. Just gives me the shivers. And it tied into the Crisis. Because you had Corona in it.
Yeah.
And you had, you had the big... and I like, you know, book one, they and DC and Marvel took turns publishing it. And there, like, for example, book one was, the title is A Journey into Mystery, which is an old Marvel title. And just all the, and it just shows what a quality writer Busiek is. See, book two, A Contest of Champions. See, that's that old, I think that's one of the first miniseries was that was Contest of Champions.
It was the first.
I thought so.
No, wait a minute. It was the second. I'm sorry. DC had the first one with the Batman, Secrets of the Batman. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry.
But, so you got, you know, the Marvel Universe and the DC Universe meeting, the different ways that they do things. And I remember reading an interview with Busiek, how he thought it out, how, you know, the heroes in the DC Universe, they think things through before they do it, and then the Marvel Universe is, oh, there's something bad, let's beat the crap out of it. I'm paraphrasing, but that's pretty much, if you think about it, and that's exactly how they handle it when they get, you know, there's a bad guy from our universe attacks, and DC Universe attacks the Marvel Universe, and vice versa, and you can see how they're, you know, handling it, and it's pretty much like that. And then when they meet, you see that, you know, Captain America and Superman, they're being manipulated into, you know, being fighting, and it's awesome.
There's that cool scene from number one where the Avengers are all fighting Starro.
Yes, that's awesome.
It is awesome. It is incredibly awesome. Mm-hmm. I wish they'd had a better villain to go up against the Justice League from the Avengers universe than...
That Terminus, yeah.
Yeah, the Terminus, but still. That's one of those books that just... When you heard it was finally coming out, it's like, mm-hmm. It's got to be drawn by Press. Oh, it's drawn by Press. Well, it's got to be written by Busiek. Oh, it's written by Busiek. Oh, my God.
I think he's a perfect choice.
They even used in there... One of the, I think it was in issue two or three, they used that image that he drew from way back in the day with the two teams facing off against each other. Mm-hmm. The one that was the famous poster that was for the original, when they originally were going to publish this thing.
And I'm looking through it, and then, there's a picture of Apocalypse with Darkseid standing there with the Infinity Gauntlet on his hand.
Cool.
And it doesn't do anything in DC Universe, so it's like, you know, it's really, and Thor and Superman fighting, and the non-fight of Batman and Captain America, they just kind of do moves around, and they're like, nobody's going to win this, so they just go on, and I would love to do this on the show, go through this, just like, you know, okay, well, this scene changed, and then and talk about who's what era these different characters are in. I think that's fun.
That period when it's switching from version to version to version,
exactly.
And Captain America and Superman are like, something's mm-hmm. wrong here. Because they're the ones who are most in touch with the purity of their own universes. And
that's right.
They're the only ones who realize something's wrong.
Yep. And the scene where Captain America goes to the Batcave and he stands there and he sees Jason Todd's costume, and you hear him whisper and says, "You lost a partner," and just things like that. It's just awesome. It's I take it out and read it every once in a while. And there's the companion book in the big size of it. It's got all kinds of notes and stuff and sketches from the original, that all the original pages and everything, and you know, copies of them. And it's just good stuff. Good stuff all around.
This was sort of on my list. I almost picked DC versus Marvel. Mm-hmm. Mine. That was one of
yeah.
my picks.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because it came out after this one came out, because this was such a mm-hmm. huge success.
Oh, yeah.
And Marvel and DC were actually talking at that point, or at least mm-hmm. Doing stuff together.
Oh, wow. I forgot about that.
Which, DC versus Marvel?
No, I was just skipping through there, and there's this big thing where the Corpse of Galactus is the stronghold of the villain that they're going to fight. Sweet!
Isn't Galactus, or no, Doctor Doom is fused into the Source Wall.
Yep, yeah, that's right.
At one point.
Mm-hmm. That is correct. Yeah, Captain America tells Superman to take his shield, because he'll be in... coordinating the attack, and just can't think of anybody better to carry it, and it's like, oh man.
I'm gonna make you fall in love.
What the?
Sorry. Yay.
Good stuff. Makes me break out into song.
My other choices were gonna be Identity Crisis and Spider Island, but.
Oh, yeah, see, now I really need to catch up on my Spider-Man stuff. I still got a whole bunch of those.
Yeah, I had Identity Crisis as a possibility, but the...
Identity Crisis, yeah, that was something.
Yeah. Yeah. I had lots that were almost there. Like, I like the idea of Secret Invasion. I like the idea of Civil War. I like the idea of that maximum... What was it called? It was Kurt Busiek and Jerry Ordway, Maximum...
Oh, what was that?
Like a prison. Earth got turned into a prison.
Oh, yeah. The alien races decided to make Earth a prison.
Yeah.
Oh, what was that?
Things
Maximum something.
I know. Maximum... Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Yeah, but I know what you're talking about.
They either fell apart or they were way too hard to follow or they just didn't quite live up. Like, Secret Invasion had so much that I thought you could have done with it, and it didn't really go where I was thinking it was going to go. Anyway, it doesn't matter. There were lots of things that I could have picked, but those are the three I picked.
I think you did fine.
I agree. There were ones that, again, that I was that when you said the subject, I thought it's just like you. I thought, oh, this should be pretty easy. But just like with you, it was like the payoff just wasn't there. Civil War was going to be one of my choices, but then I started looking at where it ended up, and I just didn't. I didn't feel good about it. You know, Fall of the Mutants was also going to be on mine, but again,
Fall of the Mutants, yeah, that's a good one. I've got the omnibus of that.
I didn't think it ended well. I didn't think it ended very strong.
No.
But it's interesting that they come up with the big idea and they just can't seem to always make it pay off. I was going to do Death of Superman. That actually still paid off.
That's a good one too.
If we were to do a favorite Superman one, that would probably somewhere be on there somewhere. But anyhow.
All righty.
Mm-hmm. So we got a couple Batmans. We got some DC. We got some Marvel. We didn't go outside the big two though.
No. Well, they don't do crossovers that much though, do they?
You could look at some of the things like there was, you know, like Batman meets Tarzan or Superman.
Yeah,
meets
that's true.
Those kinds of things crossed my mind as well. But those seem to involve the big two. I mean, they've done the stuff where they've crossed over the pulp heroes over in Dynamite or even when Dark Horse had them.
That was unfortunate.
So.
I actually read some of that, and even though it was our buddy Chris Roberson, I didn't really enjoy it.
There have been opportunities, and there's been some outside of DC and Marvel stuff, but no doubt these are the ones, at least for me, that made the biggest impact. I'm like, ooh, I remember that. I didn't have to think hard about them.
Yeah, I agree.
Cha-ching.
Anyway, that's mine.
Alrighty.
Okay.
Good choices. I am going to pick up that. I actually want to get that Brotherhood of the Fist one. So.
Yeah. That's. You got to buy the issues, but it's only $10 all together.
Okay. Or. Or.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Or. Gotcha. Duh. Let's see.
Hey, real quick. I'm sorry. Total change of subject. And I just wanted to say this out loud because I was at Walmart the other day, and they had these $5 collections of Marvel series for sale at Walmart. I got
Okay.
Big Time, the Spider-Man collection of Big Time. I got it's got the first five issues of Guardians of the Galaxy collected.
Really? At Walmart?
Yes, Walmart. $5 freaking dollars for these things.
Huh.
The quality is incredibly bad in terms of the binding, but because I folded over the cover a little bit and it came the glue came undone, but still for $5.
Yeah, well, that's why they're $5, huh?
Yeah. Anyhow, just something to think about. And I did.
Awesome.
Sorry.
No, that's cool, man. Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
Okay. Sorry. Let's go on.
No, that's cool.
Done. I'm shut up now. I gotta go to soccer. I gotta softball anyhow. So
okay, I got a call. I gotta return, but then I'm done. Anything? What about you, Murray? You good?
I'm good.
All right, let's put a cap in this one. Let's see here. As always, you can send us an email at podcast@talesfromthelongbox.com and let us know what you think. Or you could join us on the Facebook page or a growing legion of fans. I don't know, 100 and something, is that a legion? Yeah, it's sort of a legion. No, anyway.
Legion, we're beyond the charter at 25, sorry.
Oh, that's true, yeah, good point. Our tax bill is going to be huge. Let's see, what else? Yes, comment on the actual episodes and let us know what you think. And I've given up on you iTunes people. I'm not talking to you anymore.
Ouch.
So, anyway, that's about it here. And we are out.